Blog Talk Radio.
It's Monday night, it's 10 o'clock, and we're live with Graphic Policy Radio. And with me, we have a guest, Jeremy Whitley, the writer of Princeless. Thanks for joining us. And Alana just called in the nick of time. How are you both doing?
I'm great.
So, Alana, you there? I'm going with no. Okay. Technical issue, I'm guessing. I noticed her kind of logging in was a little bit weird, so hopefully she will hang up and come back. Sorry, so Jeremy, first, we are huge fans of Princeless and various other comics you do, so to be able to have you on the show is awesome. It's something I've kind of wanted to do for a while, and with the second volume coming out, it seems to be perfect timing to do that. So thank you for joining us. So I guess the...
Thank you, I'm glad to be on.
Yeah, so I think starting off, the best place is just to go with, describe Princeless for us. We might as well, for people who don't know, and we do have a good chunk of people who barely know comics listening to the show, I guess give us the pitch, because it's something that kind of, it really threw me, and I think it's really unique and very awesome.
Yeah, so Princeless is the story of a princess, Princess Adrian, who is locked in a tower by her, I don't want to say evil, but I always do her evil parents. She's expected to be rescued by a prince and marry off and do what princesses do. But instead, she decides to save herself. She teams up with the dragon who's supposed to be guarding her and goes off to rescue her sisters. So the first volume was mostly about, you know, her escaping and kind of trying to figure out the rescuing thing. So the second volume is going to pick up with her trying to rescue her older sister, Angelica.
So I think Alana's joined us. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Excellent. There seemed to be a little technical issue, but cool. So I guess the best place to start, Jeremy, is like where did the idea come from? As a whole for the series, because actually I don't think we've ever had this discussion, and I'd be a bit fascinated to hear.
Yeah, well, it's kind of simple in that, you know, I'd always wanted to have a daughter, and I have one now. She was born, you know, a little while after Princeless started coming out. And the big thing for me was I have these nieces and cousins who have kind of grown up into this princess culture thing. Where, you know, that's sort of what they're spoon-fed from a young age is princesses. That's what they're supposed to be like. That's what they aim for. That's, you know, kind of what they're fed when, you know, boys are being fed superheroes and stuff like that. And it always struck me as weird. I don't like it. And I didn't want that to be what my daughter felt like was, you know, her only possibility, or what she felt like was where she had to go, or what she had to aspire to was, you know, being somebody who has to be rescued. And I didn't feel like there was enough stuff like Princeless out there, and nothing that quite fit, you know, the story I wanted to tell or the story that I wanted to exist. So I felt like I had to create it. And that was, you know, basically my main impetus is, you know, I wanted to create something that I felt like needed to exist. And from there, it sort of gained a bit of momentum and picked up, you know, things here and there. And I've used it as a way to talk about some things that, you know, bother me in comics as well, and generally in pop culture, science fiction, fantasy, stuff like that.
So what, I mean, were you a comic fan growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. I was one of those, you know, I was a big comics fan growing up. You know, I grew up sort of on the West Coast. I lived in the Bay Area for a while and had a big comic book store there that, you know, my dad and my brother and I used to walk to. I and you know that was sort of what started it. When we moved to the East Coast, I live in North Carolina. You know, we lived in a town sort of in the foothills of the Carolinas, and there wasn't much there in the way of comics or anything. So, you know, I sort of fell out of it for a while, and then when I went back to college in Chapel Hill, I picked it up a little bit at a time, you know, started dropping by the store here and there, and of course that turned into, as it's wont to do, one of the, you know, $25-$30 a week comic habits. So I'm much more into comics than I was for a while, but it's always been a big part of my life.
What were you reading growing up?
X-Men, Spider-Man, and an odd assortment of, you know, other mostly Marvel stuff and DC stuff here and there, but mostly Marvel. I remember distinctly going to a Stan Lee signing where they were starting up the 2099 stuff, so it's a kind of an idea of when I was into comics originally.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the reason I ask is because the big thing, I think Alana would agree with me, is, I mean, Princeless just, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it, takes the whole convention of the misogyny and how generally women are portrayed in comics and throws it out the window, and not only throws it out the window, but just completely mocks it and makes fun of it all.
And what's so impressive to me also is that you have this level of humor that works for adults because we're aware of the genre conventions that you're mocking. And I think, you know, I don't like have an army of children who I can interview on this, but it seems like for kids, like they don't need to know any of that. It's still funny and it still works for them.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big thing for me in writing for kids in general, is that I try not to talk down to kids. I think kids are generally pretty smart. And that stuff like the jokes in Princeless, stuff like the costumes that superheroes wear, they are innately funny. And that, you know, if you put that sort of thing out there to kids, they're going to understand it. They're going to get it. And I think the adults, more than anything, are the ones that I feel like I have to explain it to. I mean, kids get that, you know, if you're going to fight somebody who has a sword, probably a bathing suit is not the best thing to show up in.
Thank you. I wish that more people working in the big two comic publishers seem to understand that concept. You've got great armor designs, and I love that scene that you have between the princess and Bedelia, you know, who works in the armor. She's an armor blacksmith herself, and it's a really fun one and really, really great scene. How do you write so that something will work for kids and adults at the same time? And how do you sort of suss out what kind of age range your audience is when you're thinking of kids, of writing for kids?
That's a tough question for me, because I feel like I kind of wrote it with the idea that anybody could get it, anybody could read it or have it read to them, and that, you know, they would enjoy it. I try to stay away from being too violent or grim in it. But, like, I didn't know what age range it really would fall into until, like, it got nominated for an Eisner in the 8 to 12 age range. And I was like, oh, is that the age range? And then, okay, well, thanks for telling me, somebody. I didn't really know until then, and I still think, you know, it's good for ages above and below that, obviously. But I think that, you know, physical humor is a good part of it without going overboard with it. I think everybody kind of gets physical humor, and there is, you know, a bit of that in there. And then, you know, I think a lot of times you tell a story with characters, and characters can be funny without being really age specific. Like, I think Bedelia works really well that way. She's, you know, sort of an oddball. She's spent a lot of time by herself, and she has a lot of a lot of ideas in her head that she's anxious to get out to people. So she kind of she comes off a little strange, but generally hilarious.
So the other thing got me is the series one basically takes the whole sexism comics, flips it around, and kind of mocks it mercilessly. But it's also, it stars an African American main character and a very, you know, strong-willed, awesome one at that. Whereas in fairy tales, you think of the blonde-haired, white, you know, kind of the Disney princess.
I love that she gives people grief when they call her fair. Like, I thought that was the funniest joke.
What was your thinking about making the main character African American?
Yeah.
I guess it really wouldn't be African American since she's a fairy tale
African
American. Doesn't exist.
I've given people a hard time about calling her African American before.
I don't know what to call her.
That's one of the interesting things about the character that my wife pointed out to me, is that she is black, but she's neither African nor African American. And my wife is black, and she thought it was a really sort of interesting an interesting thing that you can have, you know, in a fantasy story, somebody who's black who doesn't necessarily have this history that, you know, everybody who's African American has to deal with, and that, you know, that was something that I started with from the beginning. Is you know, my wife, just like I said, is black. My daughter is black, and you know, the character is actually based on pretty loosely one of my wife's sisters, who's named Adrian. And I wanted to reach out to, you know, a lot of the girls that don't really have anybody to relate to in comics especially, but a lot of pop culture. There's not that many, you know, girls of color in fantasy. Sci-fi is getting a little better, but sci-fi is a little weird too. But comics is especially strange that in, you know, a medium that's all about empowerment, that we leave so many people out. It's strange to me. Like, I've put a lot of commentary out there about it and talked a lot about it, but I, more than anything, it just feels strange and terrible to exclude people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so you kind of mentioned that you were nominated for an Eisner for it, and like, well-deserved. I saw it on the list, and I was like, hell yeah, it's a great, great choice. So the first off is, how did you find out about it? Like, really, you know, is it like, you know, you always hear things with the Oscars where these people are asleep, and they get a phone call, and then all, like, the deluge of press calls happen. So kind of take us through how you found out.
Yeah, it was a pretty kind of amazing experience, just because, you know, a couple of, you know, we've sent all the stuff off, and, you know, I work with Action Lab, my publisher, so I do a lot of stuff for Action Lab as well. So I knew it was getting sent off. I was kind of a part of all of that, but I really never expected anything to come of it. And, you know, we got five Glyph Award nominations a couple weeks before, and I was really excited about that. That was, I thought, the last I was going to hear awards. And it was a strange thing, because it was I had the day off for some reason. I had a weird schedule at the time, and I was sitting with my wife. It was like the middle of the week. We were just we were eating at a restaurant, and I got an email that was, you know, had Eisner's in the heading, and I was like, yeah, sure. But yeah, it was from my editor, who had gotten, you know, an email from the Eisners, basically like a week before they put out the list. They send stuff to the publishers to say, hey, you're going to be nominated for an Eisner. This is the information we have on your book. Is all of this right? Just so, you know, they don't put out a publicity bet and have the wrong name on there or, you know, mess something up horribly, which is, I think, really, really smart move on their part. But, yeah, I got that just, and I was looking at it, and I had to read it several times because I didn't quite get it. And I guess I was just sitting there staring dumbfounded at my phone, and my wife was asking me what it was, and I just gave her the phone because I was like, I didn't know really how to talk about it at that point. But, yeah, it was a huge, like, it was amazing for us that we got nominated for anything and that we got nominated for two things. You know, we got nominated in the ages 8 to 12 category for, you know, best series. And then we got nominated for best single issue, which was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. Because that's, like, of all the comics, of everybody, one of our issues was one of the five that was listed for best single issue. And that is, like, that was insane to me. Like, just to have the chance to get beaten by Mark Waid at something was pretty amazing. Like, and I knew at that point that, you know, I had lost to Mark Waid. It was like Daredevil and Locke and Key and Unwritten. And I was like, well, I might have lost to Joe Hill. I might have lost to Mark Waid, but I lost to somebody. but, you know, it was a huge deal just to be at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to imagine when you're sitting there, one, not expecting it, but then it's like, oh, I'm going up against Mark Waid, Joe Hill, and I remember looking at the list, and I was like, holy crap, this is like a who's who of writers right now.
It's unusual for an all-ages book to make the best issue list, am I right? I mean, so that really says something to the kind of attention that the comic's gotten and to how special and unique it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, as far as I know, it's an unusual thing. It wasn't something I'd really thought about up to that point because, you know, it's obviously eligible for that category, but I didn't really expect to be nominated for that category. So, yeah, I mean, that was a pretty big deal. And then, you know, obviously, like, I went out to the Eisners. It was my first time at the San Diego Comic-Con this year. You know, I was feeling kind of down because I, you know, lost both of those. I lost to Roger Landridge in the 8 to 12 category and Mark Waid in the single issue. But, like, Mark Waid got up and was giving a speech, and he was like, man, this is the first time I've won an Eisner, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, well, this is the first time Mark Waid's won an Eisner. Maybe I'm all right.
That's good.
I mean, this is the guy who wrote Kingdom Come, right?
Yeah, if you got to lose, this is a guy to lose too. I mean, he was he crushed it that year. I think everyone pretty much named Daredevil as the best series and him the best writer.
Have a question. Have you had many Have you had opportunities? Have many conversations with kids about the comic who have read it, and what kind of feedback do you hear from them?
I've had a few. And, you know, I've had some secondhand ones that were pretty awesome as well. I have a good friend who's a teacher and had, you know, bought a couple of copies for her classroom when she was up here. And she actually sent me a copy of a poem that one of her middle school students wrote that was apparently inspired by Princeless and that that the student wanted her to share with me. And it's pretty amazing. I actually posted it on the Princeless Tumblr, but, that was just awesome to me. And then, like, I did some, signings for Free Comic Book Day last year at, Big Planet Comics, up in and around the DC area. But, I think, you know, I started in Vienna and we moved up to College Park by the end of the day. But in College Park, I actually had a girl, you know, that came to the table and had, like, a notebook with questions to ask me about the book, you know, wanted to know things about the book. And I was, like, that to me was awesome. Like, you know, I enjoy talking to people and doing interviews and stuff like that. But to have, like, this this girl who, you know, read my book was probably in middle school herself at this point and just, like, had all these questions and wanted to know things. Like, that's the coolest to me.
And, yeah, that signing in Big Planet in the Vienna store was actually the first time we met in person.
Yeah.
And you were actually one of the big reasons I went out to that was I was like, I really want to meet this guy, shake his hand, and just, you know, chat with him. So that was, that seems so long ago. but
yeah, I mean, it was not even a year now. So,
yeah.
but yeah, that was really cool. Like, the guys at Big Planet, I can't say enough about, like, they treated me and, Jorge, who was there signing with me, they treated us great. And, you know, they bought us lunch. They drove us up to the other store. And, you know, just, you know, had us in there for pretty much the whole day at one store or another. I mean, I just had a great time there. So I couldn't recommend that more for, you know, creators and stuff going to that store. So.
We're actually live, so if anyone is listening, and I've been told there might be a few, you can actually call in and talk to Jeremy and ask your own questions at 619-768-2952. You know, feel free to throw questions out there, and we'll keep on chatting because you know, it's just a great book, and it's awesome to be able to promote it. So you mentioned Action Lab. Like, how did you get involved with a publisher? I mean, for people who might be getting into comics or just starting off, you know, what advice do you have? How does one kind of get hooked up with a publisher? You know, how did that all come about?
Yeah. My biggest advice and what, you know, was really what got me hooked up with Action Lab is just to go to conventions and talk to people. Talk to people who are doing the same thing as you, who are doing what you want to do. Because, like, most creators are great people, you know, guys or girls, and they are more than happy to share what they know and to get, you know, whatever you have to share. Because really what happened for me was I had a single issue of Printless done, you know, that was illustrated by a friend of mine, you know, who had done the issue and then pulled out because he didn't have the time or money to commit to doing comic books. Which, if you're thinking about doing comics, it takes a lot of time and money. But, you know, with me, I was carrying it around, and I was sitting at Heroes Con with my artist on the Order of Dagonet, Jason, and we were next to Kevin Freeman and Dave Blanch, who were, you know, pushing their own stuff. And we all had just a terrible sales weekend at Heroes Con. Like, none of us made any money. And basically what ended up happening is Dave and the other guys, Dave and Sean Gabarin, Sean Pryor, and Chad Ciccone, the whole group kind of got together and talked about what wasn't working and what they wanted to do. And that was sort of where Action Lab was born, was at that convention. And I just happened to be sitting in the right place. Like, you know, at the end of the convention, we had heard each other's pitches a lot of times. That always happens. So, you know, we swapped books, and you know, I got an email from Dave a couple weeks later that was like, "Hey, I really enjoyed your book. You know, it's the sort of thing I have to work on. You know, we should try and do something at some point." And I was like, "Hey, so you wanted to work on this book? I don't have anybody else doing it, so." What he ended up doing, instead of just working on it himself, was hooking me up with Action Lab, and he became my editor on that book, and he hooked me up with Ben Goodwin, who did the first volume, and then eventually hooked me up with Emily Martin, who's illustrating it now. And, you know, it was all kind of happenstance. Like, I, you know, worked on stuff, got it out there, had it with me, and then just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
How long did it take you to actually put together the book?
From, like, the time we set up everything with Action Lab to the time we got books coming out was it was probably February or March when we got everything started, and then, you know, it didn't start coming out until I think it was September or October that it started. So it was the better part of a year for the four volume or four issue volume. and we still didn't get a lot of it out on time. So it is time consuming.
Oh, and I actually think we have a caller. Hi, you're on the air with Graphic Policy Radio and guest Jeremy Whitley. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Hansel Moreno. I'm calling from Harlingen, Texas.
Cool. Thanks for calling in. So what's your question?
I was just wondering how, I don't know if you answered because I paused my radio so we don't get feedback. I was wondering how the you got the backup with Jim Zub happening.
By the way, hey, Hansel.
Hey, how's it going?
Internet know each other now. I'm sorry, I'm dying over here a little bit.
We need to pause for you to grab water.
I've got the water. It's not quite
open.
Yeah, it's working on it. All right. So yeah, the whole thing with Jim Zub was that was all Ben Goodman's doing. They know each other from chat boards and stuff like that. So, we were both working on Fantasy Comics, and Jim's a big supporter of, you know, other creator-owned stuff and getting things out there. And some people had sort of told him, "Hey, you guys should do a crossover together." And it was like, "Yeah, that's something we should do." And then it kind of happened. We, you know, just went ahead with it, and it was you know, a small comic. Jim wrote it and Goodman drew it, and it was, I guess, another one of those things of being in the right place at the right time. But it was a fantastic bit of, you know, just creators supporting each other.
Yeah, we've had him actually on the show quite a while ago. He was great to talk to. He's a huge supporter, and not to plug someone else, let's focus on you, but he's got Uncanny Skull Kickers is coming out in, I think, a few weeks. So for folks who are a Jim Zub fan, definitely check that out, and always Pathfinder as well. So you have any more questions for Jeremy?
I have lots, but I'll just keep it to one more. You've been talking about Princess for a while, but did it get the reaction you got? Was it as big as you expected, or was it bigger? How do you feel about that?
sorry to die. It was weird because I didn't know what to expect as far as reaction. You know, I didn't expect it to be really big, but honestly, its success was really kind of a slow burn, because when the first issue was launched, when it was in previews, we only got a total of, I think, about 700 orders nationwide for the first issue. So it was not a hit off the bat. And, you know, of course, it went down from there for 2 and 3. And by the time 4 came out, 1 was already out and doing pretty well and getting hard to find. So, you know, our orders went up a bit more for 4, and we had some issues with Diamond because our numbers were so small in the first place. They were hesitant to let us do back orders on it. But I guess it just got to the point where enough people were asking that they let us through. And then when the trade came out, you know, it started to catch fire a bit more. But, you know, it was at first a little bit of a, and then it kind of turned around and became a lot more than I expected. So I guess the answer is both. It was both less successful and more successful than I had hoped. And I'm certainly thankful and somewhat amazed to kind of be at the level of semi-popularity that I am now. So.
Cool. Well, thanks for calling in with the questions. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I have a question about What was your character design process like for coming up for the main characters in the comics? Did you have a picture of them going into it, and did that change over time as you were creating the storyline?
It's changed a bit. My scripts are generally a little vague in some areas and heavy in others. I don't like to over describe stuff that isn't absolutely essential to the art. Like I like to give the artists some room to actually do what they do, because they're better at it than I am. So I think it's important to give them some wiggle room. And that's what I did, is I wrote, some kind of ideas of what I wanted from Adrian. And Goodwin basically took some of those and then threw some of them out the window. and sent me several different ideas of what, she thought the character should look like, and some different ideas of armor and stuff like that. We went back and forth quite a bit on it, and, the same is sort of true with Emily and I now. The biggest change from what Adrian looks like now as compared to what she was originally supposed to look like is the original Adrian was going to have like a full afro. And we brought it down a bit. We try to keep her hair somewhat natural looking, but it's not sort of, Misty Knight level afro anymore, which was what it was in the original design, in the original, one issue that I'd done before. But that's an important thing to me, for the character to have realistic black hair, because I think that's something that a lot of creators miss in designs for black characters, is, and particularly in a lot of mainstream characters tend to be white characters painted black, rather than making a real effort to have black characters. And it's a really hard line to walk, especially as a white creator. You don't want to overdo it. You don't want somebody to look stereotypical. And luckily, I've got a very honest wife who is very happy to tell me when I really screw something like that up. So I'm lucky in that respect. But, you also want to make sure that you don't just create a character who is black because you need a black character but has nothing else black about them,
Is there anything... Yeah. Is there anything where you had to rewrite it because of that, or you wrote something and you're like, oh, this is totally fine, and you showed it to your wife, and your wife was like, no, absolutely not?
There's not been a whole lot of that. There are a couple of wording changes that she has or hasn't liked here or there. The biggest thing that I included just from talks with her was there's a whole, the whole first scene with Adrian at the beginning of the series is a scene where her, her mother is brushing out her hair and wrapping it up for the night. And I wanted to have that be a realistic and relatable scene, for something that a lot of black girls went through growing up. And it was something that she had talked about. I remember we had seen a painting at one point when we were living in Asheville of, just sort of the hair ritual. It was something that I wanted to try and relate. And I have gotten a couple of positive comments on that scene. And that was really something that I was hoping would come across, is my sort of good intentions there and trying to give the character some, uniquely black elements to her character, while not overdoing it. I mean, cause that first issue has a lot of kind of statements that way, and that, you know, she, like Elena was talking about, she yells at the guy for calling her fair. And, you know, we have the whole hair scene and the whole dissecting of the fairy tale from the beginning, all sort of fit in there. And then, you know, it's something that I don't intend to do that in every issue. I don't want that to be something that every issue I distinctly point out that she's black and make it a big deal. But, you know, it is something that I wanted to make sure to acknowledge and put out there and make the character, you know, real and relatable in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, you talking about that, it kind of reminds me of the second volume. Towards the, I don't remember if it was the first or second issue, there's another, I'll call it a hair scene, that occurs for both characters, where they, more the girly elements, where you there's so much empowerment going on, it's almost a reminder that, yeah, they're still girls, that I really thought stood out to me. That was kind of like, yeah, you know, they might be kicking ass and going out and really taking charge, but at the same time, these are, you know, teenage-ish girls. When it comes down to it, that I thought it was a really nice touch. I think overall, to me, there's so much small nice touches throughout the series, and even just small quick jokes. I mean, I think it was like the third issue where there's like a debate about socialism that I laughed. I was like, this has got to be so over the head of kids, but it's just awesome to have this in there. So, yeah, I mean, to me, it's those small touches, because I picked that up towards the beginning as well, that I think is really overall makes the series for me. It's fantastic that you get putting, like, small details and touches like that throughout. And on to the second volume, when is official street date coming out? I know it's this month, but do you have the specific week?
I'm not absolutely certain about that. I did want to sort of touch on what you were talking about there, and that the hair scene you're talking about in the second volume, I mean, it's not something a lot of people have seen yet who are not reviewing it, but it is something, it's kind of, I wanted to have a moment like that where, you know, they're traveling with a guy who's a poet, and, you know, they both wake up and have hair issues and rush off to fix them. And there's a moment where they both kind of look at each other and go, like, why are we doing this? Like, neither of us are interested in this guy, right? No, neither of us are interested in this guy, but still, you know, they're both still worried about it, even if they don't really, like, they can't say why they're worried about it. It's just kind of a thing. So, I like to have, I like to make sure that those moments are in there. I don't want it to be all fight scenes or all commentary. Characters are a real important thing to me. As far as, the release, like, the second volume is starting up this month. It should be, I think, the last week of the month. That's how we have it scheduled out. So should be right around the end of the month. And then, issues 2, 3, and 4 should be March, April, and May as well. And then, of course, we also have a Princeless story in one of our free comic book day books, which will be coming out in May as well.
Nice. So how's, when it comes to the free comic book day, I mean, I generally know how it works, but I think a lot of people out there don't. They just go to their shops and, you know, pick up their free books. As a creator, how does that work for you? Was the process of, like, thinking of through what you wanted, you know, actually have to put out, but two, overall, you know, how does the process go about?
It's a pretty intense process, just because you have to apply for it almost like half a year ahead of time. I think it's probably more than half a year ahead of time now that I think about it. But, you know, we had to submit these applications for what we wanted and kind of where we wanted them to be and see what happened. You know, some books stores are required to buy, some books they're not. It depends what tier you're on. And, you know, the Diamond sort of decides the tiers based on, you know, what books they think are sellable, what books they think are a reasonable price. With Free Comic Book Day, it's sort of a weird thing. Obviously, people that pick up books in stores don't pay anything for them. The stores do pay something for them to us, because obviously we have to print them. We have to try and cover our costs to some extent. So, you know, it's generally a store has to kind of weigh how much they're going to gain from having free books in their store as compared to what they're going to have to pay for them. So we, you know, we did our best to mark our two books as low as possible, so that, you know, stores could pick them up and so that people could experience them. And we've gotten a lot of great feedback from stores on that. Like, they really want to support, you know, publishers, small or large, with Free Comic Book Day stuff. But obviously they don't want to go broke doing it. So, you know, making those kind of connections and talking to stores and having the store support you is really awesome. And then Free Comic Book Day, we're going to get as many of our guys out there as we can, you know, at stores signing stuff. I'm going to be this year, I'm at Ultimate Comics here in Durham, North Carolina. I know we're going to have some guys up in Pittsburgh, and we've got some guys out in the Bay Area as well. So I know as many of our creators are going to try and be out as possible, as well as the, you know, Action Lab kind of core group here. And we've got two books coming. It's going to be the one with Princeless is half Princeless and half Jamal Igle's Molly Danger, which is going to be launching this summer. So people get a look at what that comic is going to look like, which I've gotten a look at what that comic is going to look like, and it looks awesome. So hopefully people will not forget to read the Princeless half of that book when they're blown away by Jamal's half of the book. But the second one is going to be our NFL Rush Zone, which is our NFL licensed comic. It's based on the Nickelodeon TV series. And I co-wrote that one with Kevin Freeman. And I think that one's going to be a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, for Molly Danger, I was actually a backer on Kickstarter of that. And Jamal Engle sent out a preview of I think it's the first 11 pages. And it, I can't wait. It's going to be an awesome, awesome comic. I did want to talk about the NFL Rush Zone. Actually, I was out at the Super Bowl promoting this comic that you guys are doing with the NFL off of this cartoon series. And overall, I mean, I think it's interesting is that you've got that, you've got Princeless, and then, you know, Molly Danger coming out, another, you know, female, kick-ass female lead comic. And the first thing that I'm thinking when I kind of put all that together and was thinking about it was that, you know, Action Lab's really kind of going outside the traditional comic, you know, fandom and reaching out to either, you know, showing characters that aren't necessarily have been represented in past comics or are underrepresented currently, or going out to fandoms that you wouldn't necessarily associate with comics, like football fans. I mean, there was Super Pro, but, you know, Super Pro was kind of interesting, you know, Marvel heyday sort of stuff. There's like a kitsch goofiness to it all. But, I mean, when you were kind of all putting that together, I mean, has there been discussions of being like, we really kind of want to bust the envelope and reach out to people who haven't traditionally been comic readers?
Yeah, I think, you know, Action Lab has this sort of thing with its creation. A lot of the stuff we put out refers to us as sort of mad scientists in comics. And it's kind of true. We try a little bit of everything. What comes out, I think, is very representative of the group of us, you know, because we've got a pretty diverse group between, you know, myself and, you know, Sean Pryor is black, Dave Blanche is Asian. We've got a little bit of, you know, everybody in the group. And I'm always huge into supporting new stuff, innovative stuff, good stuff, especially the stuff that doesn't get a lot of love from the bigger publishers. So I think we want to get as much unique stuff out there. The all ages thing, I think for Action Lab is sort of something that we stumbled into, you know, and that Princeless became so successful that some other good stuff found us. Like, it's one of the most amazing things to me that, you know, Jamal came to us. Like, he could really have walked up to any publisher he liked and said, hey, I want to do a creator-owned book, and they would have published it. But he liked what was coming out from us. He liked the original ideas. You know, he did a Kickstarter. He could have published it himself.
Yeah.
And just gotten it into stores. But he wanted it to be associated with Action Lab, and that's fantastic to me, and I think it says a lot for, that people have gotten what we're trying to do. And the NFL thing is another one of those just fantastic bits of happenstance that, you know, people saw what we were doing, and, you know, we made some connections that happened to be in the right place at the right time, and you know, the NFL has been really good to us with that, and that's a property that's definitely on the rise. The, you know, Nicktoon series has been fantastically received, and I think the fact that it has sort of a diverse cast there, and you know, there's you know, kids from all different groups, and there's a female football fan who's a major character in the series, is not just a boys club when it comes to football there. I think the NFL has a lot of the same ideas we do about, you know, getting out, reaching out to more people and getting them into their game, much like we want to get them into our game.
How did you get, a couple of your crew went out to the NFL experience at the Super Bowl, like, how did that go? I saw a lot of the kind of the press leading up to it, and you guys were posting a lot of photos on Facebook that made me kind of want to go to the Super Bowl someday. But overall, like, what was the feedback and the experience of, like, for the team?
Yeah, I have heard some crazy stuff about that. Dave Launch was there. He described it to me as the size of 4 San Diego Comic-Cons with about 8 times as many people. They were saying, like, the whole thing was indoors in New Orleans there. They had actually built a football field in the indoor convention center they were in, like, sodded an actual football field in the convention center. So, you know, as big as Comic-Con is, as big as comics are, the NFL is on another level of popularity that is difficult to imagine for me. You know, the number of people that actually watch the NFL and love football. And that was, you know, that was huge. There were, you know, it wasn't just us there. Nickelodeon is there. Nike is there. All these, you know, Fortune 500 type companies, and somehow Action Lab in the middle of it. So.
It's awesome. I saw the posts and my jaw dropped because I've been to San Diego and been to New York, and I'm like, this is just on a scale I can't even imagine. It was unreal, the stuff you guys were sharing. You actually do have a comic coming out this week. The Order of Agonet number 3, according to previews, hit shelves this week. So, people can go and support you this week. So I guess, you know, while we have time, like, let's talk about the series a little bit, tell folks what it's about and the awesomeness that is not just Princeless, but also Order of Dagonet.
Yeah, the Order of Dagonet is my other original creator-owned series that's coming out right now. It's written by myself and illustrated by Jason Strutt, who is local to North Carolina here as well. And basically, the story is, the mythological creatures of Britain return, run rampant, take over the country, and the only people who can stop them are the Knights of England, which, of course, these days, knights are all actors, authors, and rock stars. So our fate is in the hands of people like Elton John and Ozzy Osbourne and Ian McKellen, these folks who have been knighted. are now sort of forced to actually carry that responsibility and face down the likes of dragons and fairies and everything.
Nice. How many issues is the series total?
The plan is eventually to get it to, it should go to about 15 or 16. We are just finishing up the first arc, which is going to be collecting the first trade paperback, which will be out in April, I believe. It's going to be March is when that comes out. So next month. And it's also available currently on Comixology. In fact, the first issue of that is free on Comixology. So if you want to drop it, a double-sized first issue, absolutely free. You can check it out and hopefully decide you want to pick up more from there. But I think it's a lot of fun. It's even, if it's possible, more absurd than Princeless. A lot more just on sheer comic side of things.
Cool. So for Princeless, volume two, the first issue that will be out towards the end of the month. For folks who want to pick up the first volume, which everyone should be doing, there was a reason I picked it as one of my favorites of 2012. It's gotten the recognition and the nominations that it has. How would people go about picking up the first volume?
There's a lot of ways to do it. And actually, today I just got notified that it got listed on the Amelia Bloomer list for the American Library Association, which is they pick the books that are important. They said important, significant feminist content in kind of all ages books. So that's pretty huge for us. It's going to be hopefully a lot easier to find because of that. Right now, it is available we have a book distributor, Bookmasters. They serve basically anywhere books are sold, so you can get it through Amazon. You can, you should be able to order it through Barnes & Noble or any local bookstore. If you're a librarian or you want to get it at your library, you can order it through. I know BroadArt is carrying it. They actually did a pretty nice review and plug for it on their website. If you're more into getting it digitally, Comixology has it, and they're going to be day and date with the second volume. We also have it at Comix Plus and several other digital distributors. The first volume is available just about anywhere. If you have iTunes, it should be in your iBooks available there. You should be able to get it through Kindle or Kobo or Nook or pretty much anywhere. And hopefully that'll continue to be the case with the second volume on.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to plug or throw out there for listeners?
We've got a lot of stuff coming from Action Lab. We've got not only more all-ages stuff, but we've got a new mature readers line that we're launching called Danger Zone, which is going to be headed up by Jason Martin. So if Princeless is a little young for you, if you want something a little bit heavier, we're going to have a lot of stuff coming there. if you want to check out more about Princeless, we have a Tumblr. It's princelesscomic.tumblr.com. You can check out the Action Lab website for updates on all Action Lab stuff, which is just actionlabcomics.com. You can also feel free to just follow me on Twitter. I'm jrome58, J-R-O-M-E-58. And I'm always happy to answer questions, talk to people. If you didn't feel like calling in or talking live to people, you can just send me questions through any of those, and I'll be happy to do that as well.
Yeah, it's a really great Tumblr. Thanks for reminding folks to check that out, too.
Thanks so much for coming and joining us. I try to keep up with it.
There's really good conversations on Tumblr and social media. Bless you.
Yeah, I think Tumblr is one of those places. It's great for either great conversations or terrible conversations. So.
So cool. I appreciate you coming on. It was great talking to you, and I think I can speak for Alana and say that Princeless is awesome and that everyone should absolutely be getting it, and you have no excuse. You can get it digitally right now. So you know, it's really one of those rare comics that is great for everyone to read. So can't wait to I've read the first two issues of the second volume. Can't wait for those to come out.
I really appreciate it, and I hope they keep living up to whatever standard I've set now. So that's the real trick, is now I've apparently done well, so I have to keep doing well.
Cool. Well, I'm sure you will, if the past is any indication. The future is going to be awesome. So, again, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure.
Cool. Alrighty. So, Alana, we have, you know, a little bit to chat. We kind of mentioned a couple of things back and forth in email as to what we wanted to talk about. I guess the big news this week, or last week, was it this week? I'm totally confused at this point. Whatever.
The big news of the past several days.
I kind of want to get your opinion about it because you're much more involved with it than I am. DC Comics is kind of getting political with two new series. One's called The Movement, another one's called The Green Team. And the themes and issues of the series is going to be the 99% and the 1%. And it's got some great some talent behind it with Gail Simone's writing the Green Team. Generally, what's your take when you heard that news?
Well, I'm excited, but, you know, I'm excited but prepared to be disappointed just because it's so easy to mess that stuff up. But Gail Simone is a fantastic writer. She's definitely a writer who thinks about politics and society a lot. So I'm sure it'll have some real heft to it in terms of the content and thinking in the book. I'm not familiar at all with the other folks, really, who were involved in the series. You know, there's only so much radicalism you're going to be able to get away with in a DC book, but there's a historic precedent, though, for there being serious political stuff happening in Big Two comics. Like, you know, this wouldn't be the first time that this has happened, and I think it's going to be good to check out. Certainly looking forward to reading it. I'm also sort of, you know, come to terms with the fact that this might not be awesome. We'll have to see. I wish I had more information to run off of, you know, but
yeah.
I do love Gail Simone, so.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I mean, there's not much to come out. They made the announcement, and, that was it. So the one thing that kind of struck me, though, is, and you might disagree with me, but, Occupy seems to be kind of dead at this point. I mean, they're doing some great stuff with, Sandy Relief, and there's some things here and there that have sprung out of it, but generally, what we were thinking of Occupy, of these tent cities and all that, seems to have kind of faded away. I mean,
it's definitely shifted and changed, and there definitely isn't, the same level of, encampment in most cities and stuff like that. Yeah, but I still don't think, would it have been great to have this coming out in the heat of everything? Sure, but it doesn't bother me that it's coming out now.
I think that's kind of my thing. The first thing I thought about it was just this would have been awesome a year or two, you know, a year and a half ago.
I think it's fine to come out now.
It's cool.
The subject being the class war is evergreen, regardless of whether or not there's people in the streets in any significant number saying so. It's still completely timely.
Yeah. The interesting also is DC. I mean, part of the new 52 was them to be more, I guess, with it when it comes to real world issues. I mean, the thing with DC was, and the big difference between DC and Marvel was, DC was never there was no President Obama, there was no Bush in the DC universe. It was always kind of these generic presidential characters.
Except for President Luthor, but yes.
Yeah.
Other than President Luthor, it's always pretty generic.
I have my button that's Luthor for President. It's one of the coolest collectibles that I've got. Whereas Marvel has President Obama.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of the only thing that really caught me, is, you know, DC did this Decisions comic in 08, I think it was, and the comic was horrible. I mean, like, it was god-awful. And I think that was the only thing kind of when I saw this was I immediately went back to that Decision 08 comic. It was a decision.
No,
I think it was just called Decisions.
This is pretty clear. Well, I shouldn't say this is pretty clear. I sense that this is driven by writers and not driven by like, you know, management saying that they have to have a political comic. So I think that when you have something like Decision, it's because like the publisher is like, we should do something about the election, but we don't want to offend anybody, so we'll just make it stupid. This seems to actually be coming from people who like want to actually write this, so I don't think it could possibly be as bad as that. Even if it's bad, it couldn't be as bad as that. Because there's some vision to it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, with Gail Simone's writing it, like, I have hope. I will kind of leave it to that. And then the other thought was, like, there is Occupy Comics that are out there. They've gone through two issues. It started off as a Kickstarter, and, I mean, they're doing amazing stuff. And the two issues that have come out, and they've updated everyone. Their third and fourth is coming, and the reason is they've got something, I think, with Alan Moore that's going to be coming out. That's going to be sweet because it's Alan Moore.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's visited Occupy movements. I mean, you could say that he's one of those influencers of the Occupy movement just for the fact that, you know, his involvement with V for Vendetta kind of has his tentacles in it very much.
Isn't it interesting to see that go full circle, right?
Yeah.
Americans would not know what that symbol was, and it certainly wouldn't be drawn in that completely standardized way if not for that comic book, period.
Yeah, and it was, you know, and one of the coolest interviews I've ever done was with David Lloyd in New York Comic Con, and we talked about that, and, you know, I was kind of like, could you ever imagine that it would become this symbol of protest, and, you know, what are your thoughts about it? His thought was just like, it's awesome that people are using it, you know, it's something they never imagined or even thought about back in the day. They, you know, they had a story, they kind of wanted to tell it, so, I mean, it's kind of grown on. The Guy Fawkes Masters has kind of grown into itself. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was just interesting with the DC announcement of like, I mean, I don't know, did you get a feeling, like, it just came out of left field to me. I was like, what the hell, where did this come from?
Yeah, it did come out of left field. I was completely surprised. I wonder if this was one of the projects that, like, when, you know, when DC brought back Gail Simone, she was like, and by the way, there's another thing I want to do. And they were like, yes, yes, please don't tell everybody we're horrible. I mean, part of me wonders if that's part of why it suddenly just happened now. So remember that book I've been telling you we should do? Now we have to freaking do it, okay? I don't know. That's just my theory.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And the other one is, it's kind of fascinating. It came out this past week, and I got the thumbs up from him to do an interview, though I don't know how the interview is going to go down, is Brian Michael Bendis has been doing this series.
What?
With Alex Maley, yes, I got Brian Michael Bendis gave the thumbs up for an interview.
What? Oh my god!
Yeah, that's gonna be cool. And so, if I have to buy you this comic, I want you to read it. So he's got a series called Scarlet that came out, and it came out around the Occupy movement. And the whole story is the first volume is this girl's boyfriend winds up getting killed by the police, and she winds up becoming kind of like this guerrilla terrorist. And I kind of described it as V for Vendetta for the Occupy movement. And she kind of does this rally and gets people kind of taking on the corrupt cops. And there's this huge gap between the fifth and sixth issue. And Bendis, in the letters of the sixth issue, talks about it was basically to, you know, to sum his reasoning up was shit got real when they started writing Scarlet. You know, Egypt, Syria, none of that was going on or hadn't occurred yet. So they kind of wrote the series as their version of this event. And, like, basically the world blew up and all these people started protesting. And they kind of took a step back, like, holy crap, where what they were writing just felt it was so real to them. So it's something in the series that I'll figure out a way to get it to you. If I have to buy it, I'll buy it.
If someone's going to come on my show, I will absolutely buy it in that case. But I've heard good things about the book. I haven't quite picked it up yet.
It's interesting because it's also that very much. I mean, one, the art's amazing because of who's Alex Maleev is doing it, and
yeah, he is very good.
Unreal, and then this story is really, I think, really, really well done. And there's some like fourth wall, broken down. It also has a, kind of going in this theme of this episode, a kick-ass female lead, and also just this very real feel to it. Especially now with what's going on in LA, I kind of want to really talk to him about that because, her going out and basically killing cops, and you've got this. Crap going on in L.A. with the Dorner, whatever the hell his name is, it makes it even more real. It's interesting is that this is becoming, with the DC, like a much bigger story than it had in the past. Like the whole Occupy, like we're going to take from this and make series out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But a happier note.
That's exciting. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. And then we've got, also, we can announce it. On the 25th, we're going to take next week off because I'm an idiot and I've scheduled something on a Monday. But in fairness, I did it way before we decided that we were going to do stuff on Mondays. We've got on the 25th, we're doing a, we've mentioned it. It's on the calendar. We've got an all Adventure Time episode coming up. Boom Studios is hooking us up and having one of their writers joining us, and I don't know if there's going to be some other folks, but we are going to be talking Adventure Time all episode. So that means I have to read all Adventure Time comics between now and then and catch up on whatever I can find online. So I have a lot to do over 2 weeks.
This is going to be a very exciting period, you guys. I really encourage all of our listeners, tell all of your friends that we're going to have some amazing shows coming up, and that you know, even if they don't listen to it live, you'll be able to get it and listen to it online. I fully demand the full power of Tumblr. Summon the power of Tumblr fandom to come in and call in and listen to our show when we have the folks from Adventure Time on, because I know that there's such a huge active fandom around that series. I am just so excited to have that come on the show.
It's going to be cool.
And Bendis, oh my God, he is the most prolific, high-quality writer around. I mean, he's done such brilliant work, and I have no idea how he could write so much. It doesn't even seem human. So, that'll be exciting.
I am somewhat excited because he's a fellow Cleveland boy.
That's right. Yeah. Fiance reads his crime comics, actually.
Yeah, I mean, he's, for people who don't know, when he started off, he was doing some great indie stuff, Torso, Jinx. I mean, not that he's not still doing great indie stuff, but, he was really doing some great crime comics, which I'm a huge fan of. I'm a big noir crime comic fan. And one of them was about serial killer in Cleveland and Elliot Ness, and I think that's Torso. I think it'll be a fun interview. So hopefully we can get him on the air. If not, I'm going to crowdsource questions for him. I think that could be a fun thing.
Ooh, that's a good idea. And I do have to shout out that I think he wrote like one of the funniest things that I ever read in a comic that wasn't like a humor comic. He wrote that page, which is from New Avengers. The scene where Luke Cage is thrown off the roof during a big ninja fight, and just you see him in an elevator with elevator music in the elevator waiting to get back up to the top of the building again because he can't fly. And then somebody comments like, "Where were you?" And he's like, "I can't fly." Which I just thought was this wonderful touch on like the logistics of being a superhero. Like you can totally throw him off top of a building, but he has to take the elevator to get back up again. He doesn't fly. It's so freaking hilarious.
I know exactly the issue you're talking about.
You know, right?
Yep.
So freaking hilarious.
And I read that too, and I was like, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
On so many levels, this is brilliant.
just the way that they had the whole thing with like a little like like music, you can hear it in the elevator.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, huge fan. That's gonna be very exciting.
Yes.
I've actually just started watching the Bravest Warriors cartoon online, which has actually increased my appreciation of the comic book significantly. Have you watched any of the cartoons for that show yet, Brett?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've watched at least the first two. Maybe more at this point. I have no idea what I've watched because I've read the comics and watched.
I watched the episode "Gas Powered Stick" 3 times on Sunday because I had to show it to other people.
It's
freaking good.
The whole thing is great. I mean, it's very much, and I would put it in the category of Prince Louis, where it's one of those comics or those stories. Cartoon comic as well that kids can enjoy and that they'll laugh at, but there's also this great stuff for adults that, you know, they're going to get as well, and probably will go over kids' heads. I mean, like, I keep on pointing to the first page of the first comic where they're out trying to save these beings, and they reference it every so often in future issues, and they're like, this planet's repressing us. You know, help us stop misogyny, and what does this team do? They blow up the other planet. And, you know, the kids would probably sit there and read it and laugh and be like, haha, they blew up a planet. And then as an adult, I'm sitting there going, holy crap, that's so wrong and yet so funny.
Yep. Yeah, and, my favorite of the comics that have come out from the Pendleton Ward world have just been Marceline and the Scream Queens. Those are my favorite of the comic books. I do think that the cartoon show itself, though, is like Adventure Time is truly the pinnacle of amazing awesomeness and brilliance, though. But I did not originally like the Bravest Warriors comic book as much, but it's definitely grown on me. Like, I like it more now that I've seen the cartoon, you know? And the cartoon gets better and better with each watching. So.
I want to say, like, the cartoon came out either that the Friday that the comic came out, or the comic was coming out, like, that next Wednesday, and then the cartoon debuted that, like, the Friday before. And I remember I watched the cartoon, and just my jaw dropped. I was like, holy crap. And then immediately, like, read the entire comic, you know, right there, being like, I just have to, because this is so twisted and so amazing. I'm a kind of fan of that really twisted cartoon. Humor. So yeah, I mean, it's I'm looking forward to it. Like, I will admit I haven't really dove into Adventure Time yet as much as I probably should have. I did read the second Fiona and Cake comic.
What did you think of the second one? You were upset you didn't like the they didn't have the same fable in it, right?
Yeah, so I read it and it's good. I didn't think it was good as the first issue. You know, if it was the type of thing, like, if the first issue is a 10, the second one would probably be, like, a 7 to me. And not saying it's the first issue was a 10, but, like, kind of trying to compare the two.
Yeah, it seems to me that it was a 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To kind of compare where they are. Like, the second one, I laughed. There was something with the pacing to it that seemed a bit more childlike to me than the first one, the first issue. You know, I did laugh where, you know, her sword breaks and she's like, it's a kitty litter sword. Of course it's going to break.
Yeah, I thought there was some really excellent poopy humor in that for kids. I read that issue and I thought this would work really well for kids, like more so than the earlier issue would actually.
Yes. You know? And that was my general take.
Poopy humor is important, you know, for the kids.
And for people who know me, I do appreciate the poopy humor. That was kind of the thing with me, was like the first one had this beautiful beginning and fairy tale aspect to it, and then the second one I was just like, it's a fight. It's what I would dub a fight issue, where there's a lot of like back and forth and comments, and maybe there's a little bit of action. And I liked it. Like, I definitely liked it and didn't turn me off at all, but it just wasn't quite as good as the first issue. Something was off. I'm not quite sure what. But it's still really good. So
Okay, good. Yeah, it is really good.
so I'm looking forward to diving into Adventure Time. I've said more than enough. I've got the folks at Boom have busted my chops ever so often as to why I'm not reading it, and then you have busted my chops quite a lot as to why I'm not reading it.
Yeah. And you got to go back and reread all the Marceline and the Scream Queen because it was amazing. And I'm not just saying that because they have the best diagram explaining Beach Boys music of all time. And it doesn't say, like, you just have to know. If you know their music and you're, like, a music geek and you're reading, like, Princess Bubblegum diagrams the Beach Boys, oeuvre, like, in a mathematical equation because she's Princess Bubblegum and that's how she sees the world. And it's just, like, this brilliant, you know, panel or two. It's like, oh, this is written for me, you know, because I'm a huge Beach Boys fan.
As someone who has, who's constantly hearing music, and my girlfriend is convinced I have a soundtrack going through my head, which I do, I have a feeling I will appreciate this.
Yeah. No, that's a really, really wonderful, I mean, I really thought Marceline and the Scream Queens was just outstanding comic book, and all of them have been really good, but just that in particular. Yeah, and I'm really excited to have them on. So everybody is going to have to call in and give us your questions for that as well, actually. I have plenty. And we don't know yet who's coming on from Boom Studios yet, right, do we?
Let me find. I did get a name, but unfortunately, since I'm not reading the comic, it was one where it was like, okay, cool.
We'll figure it out. We'll tell everybody. It'll be awesome.
It is... Adventure Time. Let's see. Ryan. It would be. One of the writers. Ryan, and I'm trying to look up his last name. I feel like an ass. I'm going through like emails right now trying to find it. We'll post it up. As soon as we're kind of done with this this week, I will kind of go through the really posting this up because I know, I mean, Adventure Time is a huge thing. If the hits to the site are any indication, this should be a very, very interesting thing.
Yeah, I'm excited. Very excited.
So, cool. And I will finally have read Adventure Time.
Yay. And watched the entire series.
So where can I watch the series? Because it's not on Netflix yet.
You mean you haven't been DVRing it and saving large quantities of the episodes on your DVR for years now?
No.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. There must be some of it must be online. Some of it must be online.
Oh, look, I would hope some of it's online. If not, I will...
There's going to be a new episode on Monday, although it's the Fiona and Cake episode, and will probably make less sense to you than most places you could use as jumping-off points. But if nothing else, you could see the episode that's going to be airing on Monday.
Cool. Okay, so. Well, I will. I guess I will start on Monday, at least, and then see what I can dig up online.
Awesome. Well, we're looking forward to it, everybody, and thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, everyone, thanks for listening. I didn't catch his name that called in. Thank you so much. I wish more of you people called in. And then especially Jeremy for joining us. Princeless is awesome. And he's also got The Order of Dagonet, number 3, which comes out this week, which is another great series. So absolutely go get Princeless. You can get it digital. You have no excuse. So I guess in 2 weeks, it's Adventure Time.
Yay. See you then, guys.
So everyone have a geeky time and geeky week.